Welcome and breathe in air. Abstract Illusions Radio, the show that explores and exposes the many aspects of expression, with your host, Jennifer Hellman.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for listening to air. I'm Jennifer Hellman, and I am really thrilled to have Inslee. My mind goes totally blank here.
Inslee McLeod.
Thank you. Originally from Scotland, this reluctant psychic used his talents to explore the soul and the effects of human beliefs and behaviors. Collaborating with elevated spirit guides, he developed and wrote a book, The Illustration, which is a way to help each of us understand our personal destiny. He is offering personal guidance to his clients worldwide on his website, which is www.soul-world.com. I found his book really insightful, and I'm really excited to talk about it. So let's get started. He will be taking general calls and general calls, no readings, general calls on the book. So if you have questions, he will be answering that. Just want to make that clear. And now I thank you and welcome you to air.
Hi, Jen. How are you doing?
Well, other than needing to stick my tongue into my mouth, I'm doing just fine.
We all have days like that.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
So let's get started by getting to know you a little bit better, okay?
Okay.
How long have you known you've been psychic? Have you always been? What was the big epiphany?
Well, I really did have an epiphany because, you know, if you're psychic, you're born with it. And I had no idea. I mean, I had weird things happen to me when I was growing up, continual strange experiences that I couldn't explain. And nobody ever said, oh, you're psychic, and that's why these things happen. When it wasn't really until about 10 years ago that after a string of coincidences, run-ins with psychics and everything, that I realized that I was psychic myself. And I had a kind of epiphany where I'd moved to California, and on my first evening there, I actually had the words of a psychic come back to me, and literally I could hear them in the room, where he said, he told me 10 years before, you're going to end up in California, there's nothing you can do about it. And I kind of hearing that and realizing that there I was, you know, it was fulfilling this prediction. Mm-hmm. It really got me thinking about the whole thing, and, you know, how can psychics do this? I mean, well, you know, and if they can, and it can be accurate. And at that point, actually, one of the things I did that night was I wrote down all the predictions that I'd had from psychics over probably about 10 years that had come true. And there were actually 50-something of them. And I just thought, you know, how I'd slept through this, I don't know. But it's just like I needed some kind of epiphany to kind of wake up and pay attention. Mm-hmm. And see that this was part of my destiny, as I've continually been told. I mean, psychics were always telling me I was psychic. I just didn't think it. Didn't know how to begin.
So how young were you when you started really running into psychics?
Oh, that started in my 20s. And I actually went to my first psychic really to kind of debunk her, you know, and show her up for being a fraud or something, I don't know. And she told me stuff about myself, and just it put shivers up my spine. And I realized, my gosh, you know, that there's something in this. But although she was one of the first, she was the first one to say, you're psychic. And I used to joke with her. You know, I used to see her quite regularly, and she'd always tell me that. And I'd always tell her if I was psychic, I'd be doing it myself, you know, instead of paying her. But,
right.
You know, I had no faith in it. And I didn't really understand a lot of stuff that was coming to me. I didn't really recognize it for what it was. And the other thing about being psychic is that it's a talent. It actually comes from past lives, like as do all talents. And I talk about this in the book. And like any talent, like music or art, you can actually develop it. You know, it's one thing just to be psychic, but it's actually another thing to actually work on it and learned to use that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big part of what I did. You know, once I learned that I could do this.
Now, it took you really 2 to 3 years, is it, of reading books and really focusing on your psychic abilities to really hone them and understand them?
It was about 2-3 years. And the big thing was really working with, I had a deceased uncle who I ran into in a bookstore in Hawaii, and he just appeared to me kind of out of nowhere and said he wanted to start working with me. And I'd already heard from a psychic just an hour earlier that he wanted to work with me. And that was really my second big epiphany, and that was the one that really got me started working. I started communicating with him on the other side and then developed a relationship with the spirit guides that I use in my work. And I have to say, I mean, I realize talking about this that it all sounds, you know, terribly bizarre and, you know, very weird. I mean, I just, you know, I went from being a kind of, you know, atheist and non-believer and skeptic and cynic, and, you know, suddenly here I am on the radio talking about spirit guides. You know, it's been a big shift in my life, let me tell you.
Well, you're also a very talented illustrator as well. You were doing that for some time as well, and became very successful.
Yeah, I did very well in that. I did that for about 20 years, and I illustrated for all sorts of major companies. I did work for Coca-Cola. Some of my work appears on a Paul McCartney album. I did some of that Chester Cheetah for the Cheetos packs.
Yes.
So, yeah, I had a very interesting and varied career as a kind of cartoon illustrator, but I just got to the point where I wanted to be a psychic more than I wanted to be an illustrator, and that was when I made the move.
Well, let me ask you a question just out of curiosity. I'm also an artist in a variety of different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that being an artist, being a musician, being somewhere on the not always logical side makes you tend to be more open to inspiration, to psychic abilities?
Undoubtedly. There's no question. You know, I hear people say that we all have psychic abilities, and, you know, as I even say in the book, you know, it's like saying we can all play concert piano. It's you know, something that some of us can do. A lot of people are not interested, and they're not going to make a very good show of it. But if you are the type, you know, I talk about the soul types in the book. They're
right. Kind
of the core of our personality. And there are most definitely certain soul types that are more open. In fact, the expression my spirit guides use is that they have one foot in this world and one foot in the next.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the ones that tend to choose a talent for intuition and often a talent for empathy as well.
Yeah.
So they tend to be more, you know, it's why you get sensitive artists. You know, it's why we have that sort of stereotype. And so there's a lot of creative people who are psychic, and they're opening up to, you know, talent and influence from the other side.
Definitely. Now, you talk about your spirit guides, and in the book you describe there's different levels of spirit guides.
Right.
Go over that a little bit.
Well, the first level is really those who are kind of in between lives. It's they're on the astral plane. It's where we'll all go when we die, and it's where we were before we came here into this incarnation. Excuse me. And there is a kind of level beyond that where we really go when we're no longer coming back onto the physical plane, when we're kind of done with all our lives. And usually, from what I understand, we have roughly somewhere in the region of 100 to 120 lifetimes on this physical plane. It's that wonderful thing about reincarnation that allows us to come back time and time again and really, you know, learn about what it is to be physical. And then when we're finally done with all that and going into the astral plane between lives, then we go to what they describe as the causal plane.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where the spirit guides that I work with reside. And they have more of the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, occasionally I talk to astral guides. They tend to be more a little bit more down to earth or practical, whereas the causal plane guides tend to look at the, you know, who you are, where you're going, where you've been, who's connected with you and that kind of question.
Okay, we do have a caller already. Hello, caller.
Hello, how you doing?
Just fine. What's your name?
Ernie.
Ernie, what is your question?
I have a question. He says he's a has these psychic abilities, and I believe that. Can he tell me something about myself?
No, as you probably heard earlier, I don't, you know, as Jen said, I'm not going to be reading anybody. I don't work that way.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's, you know, it just doesn't work for me. It's, if you want to, you know, if you want to work with me, I actually, you know, sit down. I actually have a whole procedure that I go through to make sure that I'm connected to the right source, to make sure that the information I get is as accurate as possible.
Right.
And I think there's a tendency doing it this way to shoot from the hip, and it's not always quite so accurate. So the answer is no. I don't work that way.
Oh, but there is a course involved then, right?
There is what?
There is a course involved if I were to call you or try to make an appointment with you.
Yes, certainly.
Yes, you can go on his website.
If you go to soul-world.com, that's my website, and you can go in there and you can email me and... make an appointment. Yeah, that's what I do every day. So
and
I'd
be well worth your time, Ernie.
Okay,
very
what's the website again?
It would be worth your time to contact him for a reading because he's amazing.
No, I know, but I'm saying, what's his website again?
Okay,
I didn't get it.
www.soul-world.com.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
thank
well, I'd
you,
be
Ernie.
Delighted to work with you.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you, Ernie.
Bye.
Bye.
It happens.
Right.
Now, the other thing that you mentioned about spirit guides is make sure you're talking with the right kind.
Yeah.
That there tends to be some that aren't, they're just playing with you.
Well, you know, I think we've all heard stories about people using Ouija boards and connecting
right.
with the other side and having horror stories, you know, getting told they're going to die and whatnot. The example I use is that you wouldn't pick up the phone and just dial numbers at random and ask for advice about your life. You know, so one of the big things that I spend a lot of time learning to do is making sure that I was connected to a higher source and that I had ways to avoid interference or recognize interference when it happens. And it still will happen, you know, every so often I'll talk to somebody and maybe the interference will come from a relative of theirs who's deceased and will want
right.
to take the opportunity, you know, of me being with that person to pass on a message. And so what I do is I just, you know, have ways of dealing with that, sending that person on the way or maybe getting a message first and then moving them along.
Right.
But there are, you know, there are, as I say, not everyone who's in spirit is spiritual. There are negative astral plane entities out there.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. And can you go over, you know, in the book you go over this really, really well, and this was just so down to earth and so easy to read and understand and get. It's hard for people not to understand what's going on with their lives after reading this book. I mean, it really is a wonderful, wonderful book.
Well, thank you. Yeah, when I first started reading material, you know, about trying to figure out all this stuff, I found that there are a lot of books about this, or they talk about the soul in the title, but never really fully explained what the soul does. And so I really wanted to write a book that's the kind of thing that I would understand, and just, you know, not something that's all just, you know, blather about love and light, but something that's actually much, much more practical. Which is really what my spirit guides are all about. They're all about really helping you to create a more fulfilling and happier life.
Okay, so what is the soul and what is its purpose?
What is the soul? Well, the soul is that kind of non-physical part of us. In fact, the way my spirit guides describe it is that we're, all of us, ideally we're 50% physical and 50% spiritual. The problem is that it's kind of like the analogy I draw in the book is an iceberg, you know, that we only see that little bit on the top. We think that's all there is, but there's this huge part of us that's hidden, and that's the spiritual part, the soul that we have. And it's what gives us consciousness. It's what makes us the rational creatures we are. It gives us creativity. It gives us the kind of range of emotions that we have, or at least that particular kind of soul that we have. It's to go into technicality, it's what my guides describe as a stage 3 soul. And that's something we humans have had for apparently about 55,000 years ago. It's what really allowed us to make the progress that we have.
Now, the purpose of the soul, though?
Well, the purpose of the soul is to learn what it's like to be on the physical plane. When your soul is on the astral plane, it can't actually fully learn what it's like to... it can't, in fact, grow. The way I see it is that if you wanted to, you know, learn a subject, I mean, an example I often use is ceramics. You know, you could learn everything. You could watch every video. You could watch people doing it. You could read all the books. But unless you actually roll up your sleeves and throw a pot, you're never going to know exactly what it is to be a ceramicist. So that's why your soul has to really roll up its sleeves and come onto the physical plane in a body to learn and to really grow. So the thing your soul wants is about, it wants to get as much experience of the physical plane as possible. So your soul from lifetime to lifetime bounces from, you know, one country to the next, one skin color, one culture, and really picks up everything that there is to learn about being here, to be physical on the physical plane.
So what happens when the soul achieves its goal?
Well, when the soul is done, then it flutters off to the astral plane for the last time. And as I said before, that probably might be life 110 or 120, when it's just accumulated all that it feels it needs to get. Also, there's a little business of, you know, wrapping up, you know, unfinished business with other souls, and then off it goes for the last time.
So, what about karma? In the book, you kind of say that you really don't owe anybody anything, and yet, what about karma?
Oh, well, actually, no, I actually avoid going into karma in the book because it's such a big subject.
Okay.
And it's something I'll talk about in another book another time. It's actually such a huge subject that, and it has so much bearing on what we do in our relationships. You know, that we're often here to work on karmic issues with other people.
Oh,
it's
definitely.
It's that sort of cosmic balancing act that what we do is sort of, you know, balancing experiences, seeing different sides of the coin.
Now, the book. Who are you aiming it towards?
Well, the book is really aimed at people who are on a spiritual path, who are wanting to grow spiritually. In fact, I can tell that because of the kind of clients that I have, the people I do sessions for. The thing I come across time and time again is what's described as a... there can be more than one reason for this, but there's a particular mission, and it's called a mission of change, a secondary mission of change, which is about your own personal desire to grow. And so the people that are attracted to having sessions with me almost invariably have that. I would say something like 98% have that secondary mission. And so since it's very common, a lot of people who have that will be drawn to read a book like this because it's helping to further that desire for knowledge and growth.
So what prompts you, was your clients, the reason why you were prompted to write this book, or did your spiritual guide say, all right, look, you need to sit down and write something down now?
Actually, a little bit of both, but certainly my spirit guides, they were talking about a book for a while, and I don't know, I was just, it's like a lot of things, I'm slow to pick them up, you know, like taking 40-something years to become a psychic, you know. So it took me a little while, and then I, you know, accepted the idea and started working on that. The big thing really was was my own enthusiasm for what I do. I just, you know, I love my job. I mean, I talk about myself being a, you know, a round peg in a round hole.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just discovering fascinating things about people, you know, every day. I'm doing sessions and just, you know, it's one session after another where I'm learning new things about the universe and people and how this whole thing works. And I also, you know, I was so affected by the work itself that I wanted to kind of get this across to other people because it did so much for me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the big thing it did for me was that I had a problem with self-acceptance really all my life. Big, you know, big issue. It's not uncommon. Most of us have some issue with that.
Right.
And it was really through working with my spirit guides that I got to understand who I was, why I was the way I was, and, you know, why my life being the way it was. And it just gave me such great comfort and, you know, self-acceptance. You know, I talk even in the book about how when I began working as a psychic, I was extremely embarrassed about it. You know, it's like suddenly I got the weirdest job in the world, and it's like, you know, psychics don't have such a great reputation, and I was really very self-conscious and embarrassed about putting myself out there, hanging up my shingle. And it was really working with my guides that got me over that, you know, where I just embraced my calling and I was able to stand up and go, okay, you know, I'm a psychic and I don't care how weird it is, it just happens to be what I do.
Yes, and we do have another caller. Hello, caller.
Oh, hi, it's me again, Ernie. I do have a question this time.
Okay, what's your
question?
All
right, I've read before that the soul generates many personalities. What happens, for example, I'm a personality, and then I have a soul. But what happens to me, to my personality, when I cross over?
Okay, what happens to your personality when you cross over? It's you will. Let me just go back to the step before that, which is where you choose your personality before you come into the world.
Right.
You'll choose elements of your personality, so that you actually come into the world with a fully formed personality. It's why, you know, babies, you know, they're all their own little persons, you know, they have a complete personality. And then what happens at the other end of your life, you know, when you're actually ready to go, you head over to the astral plane and you continue with a kind of vestige of your personality. Like what will happen is as you go over to the other side, you manifest more of the person you really are, and start to lose a lot of the influences upon you. And then gradually, you start to lose the specific aspects that you chose the first time, and then you start choosing new elements to go into the next life with. I've talked to my guides about this, and they have to use words that we understand to explain all the processes that go on. And so they try to put these in terms that we would understand, but then they say you have to remember that these things happen energetically in a way that is really, really hard to put words to. But this is a kind of simple way of trying to understand the process. So you do kind of lose who you are, but you gain something new before going into the next life. Does that answer that?
So the person that I am now, the being that I am now, I won't be that when I cross over?
You still have a lot of that personality for a while, but it tends to dissipate after a while. It tends to just change. One of the things that because I don't deal very much with those on the astral plane. As I mentioned before, I'm dealing with guides on another plane.
Right.
But what I do find is that on these occasions where I'm talking to those on the astral plane, that they still manifest the kind of personality they had when they were on the physical plane, almost as a way of being recognized. So I'll be talking to somebody and grandma will suddenly come in. She wants to talk, and really pretty much what they want to do is reassure the relatives they've left behind that they're okay. So they might, you know, one woman presented herself as being quite kind of grumpy and snarly about the color that this woman had painted her kitchen in. And it was actually a way of saying this is me, because that was the kind of thing she would have done when she was here. But what they tend to do is, once on the other side, lose a lot of the negativity.
Right.
And gain a lot more positivity, a lot more love. I spoke to one guy who had he died very young on this plane, and I talked to him a few months after he died on the astral plane, and he'd really he'd gone from being this kind of hard-bitten, surly kind of guy to really feeling an awful lot of regret about the people he'd left behind and the sadness that he caused, and was he couldn't talk enough about the importance of love. It was just, and in fact, that's something that's common to a lot of the people that I talk to on the astral plane, is that they really, once they're over there, they realize that they never really understood the importance of love. What it meant.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
You're so welcome, Ernie. Take care.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Bye.
So, it's really huge if you figure out the love deal while you're still on here then, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, the love thing is just huge, you know, that we get wrapped up in our own lives and, you know, the drama on the physical plane and forgetting that you know, love is so important. In fact, we can be ashamed or embarrassed about talking about it. And whenever I'm talking to spirit guides or anyone on the other side, they can't talk enough about it, about the importance of it, of acting from a place of love. You know, there's just a far greater sense of connection. It actually happens, incidentally, to a lot of very old souls. I talked to one today. Somebody who's just almost, this might be her last life, you know, all being well. And there's just such a connection, a feeling of oneness with humanity, you know, that it's part of just, you know, having experienced so much and also, you know, being so close to the end and being connected. It's, you know, this is somebody who's very conscious of the importance of love and, you know, that's something I just get from the other side all the time.
It's a wonderful feeling.
Yeah. And in fact, you know, if anyone out there is interested, you can ask your spirit guides to give you love. You can actually kind of call it up. I mean, in those, you know, lonely times or, you know,
mm-hmm.
It's available. It's amazing how they can actually transmit emotions, feelings. Like
and it's beautiful. I've done it many times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's wonderful just to say, okay, download.
Yeah. Well, in fact, my spirit guides, you know, in the book I talk about this, they talk about connecting with them. They describe it as developing powers,
mm-hmm.
almost like developing superpowers, you know, that you gain this tremendous strength from making a connection with your spirit guides.
It just feels wonderful, and it's just like, okay, keep me over there. Just pull me over there. It's a wonderful feeling when you're being embraced by the divine. It's
mm-hmm.
an amazing, amazing feeling.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that I learned very early on is that your spirit guides have a kind of hands-free approach. They, you know, they're there to look after you, but only really when you call them in, because otherwise you have, they can't interfere. We're here to exercise our free will, and that's very important. But once you actually get them engaged and bring them in, it's amazing just how much they will get involved. You kind of have to, you have to make some effort. You have to take a step towards them, and then what amazes me is that you take one step towards them, and they'll take two towards you. You know, they really want to reciprocate. When I first started doing this work, I thought, here we are in the physical plane. We're all trying to contact those on the other plane, and they're not that interested. And in fact, it's almost the other way. You know, they are so much trying to communicate with us and wanting to communicate and wanting to help us.
Definitely.
You know, I talk about how the first time I finished a conversation with my spirit guides, and I thanked them very much. I mean, I was really just very humbled by the whole experience. You know, they're out there and they're talking to me. And I said, thank you. And they said to me, no, thank you. You give us a purpose. And I kind of realized then that yeah, spirit guides with no one to guide don't have much of a purpose. So they really do want to communicate with us. And the way to do that is through talking with them, getting dialogue, prayer, whatever you want to call it. It's ways of putting it out there, letting them know what you need help with, asking for clarity and so on.
Now, do the spirit guides ever get tired of you asking for clarity? I mean, I know asking specifically, I learned the hard way after losing two cars because I didn't ask specifically exactly what I wanted. I asked for my car to get paid off. I didn't ask for the car to remain, so I got two total cars out of it. And then I said, I get the clue, be specific.
Well, there is. It is important to be specific. What I've found is that my spirit guides, they want repetition if you're asking for something. If you want... So let's say, for example, you want to make contact with a deceased relative, or you want help with getting that job you applied for, then talk to them a couple of times a day about that. That's the kind of thing they talk about, repetition. It's very important. But if I ask them a question and they answer it, they consider that done, because there's a big energy exchange between this plane and the next. So it's kind of, there's a lot of energy going out both ways. And so I learned this again very early on, where I would ask a question one day, and then the next I'd ask them the question again, really for confirmation, and they'd say to me, "Well, asked and answered. We're not gonna answer that again." And got me into the habit of, if I really did want to check something, I could just ask them to confirm yes or no.
Right. And even just asking, okay, I just want to confirm that I heard this correctly.
Yes. Absolutely, and then a yes or no is fine, but asking the same question again requires, as they say, an energy exchange that, because it can be an exhausting business for them and us.
Yes. Now, the book goes through a process of going through figuring out your soul's age, and then the type, and then the mission.
Right.
And there's 10 in each one.
Right.
And my question is, what if you feel like you've gone through all of them and you're just finishing up on the last one? I mean, is it possible to go through many things in one lifetime? Because I was reading this and it's like, did I get a total review of something? Because I went through it, it's like, yeah, I remember that, and I remember that, and and it was just like almost like a checklist of everything that I've learned in this
life. Well, that's interesting, because sometimes you will have, you'll kind of complete some kind of lesson, perhaps, in this lifetime and move on to something else. Certain elements of the instruction change. Some will come and go. They use the term floating, that certain elements will float to the surface and they'll disappear and something else will take their place. But they tend to be amongst the same elements. So it's very hard to generalize about that. Generally, what happens is that we come in with a personality. The way my guides have broken this down is to look at having a soul type, and then, as you mentioned, there are 10 of each element, so there's 10 soul types. And then we have the influence of two of the other soul types, and this is how you allow for the variations in who we are, so that... the core of who you are will be shaped by the influence that comes next, and then that will be shaped by the one that follows. So it's a way of breaking down who you are into understandable pieces. It's also very important when I work with somebody and I look at, let's say they have a certain influence. I would then ask, well, why do they have that? Why would they have chosen that? For example, there's what they call a performer type, and these are, you often see that in actors and actresses, but a lot of people will choose that element. And I spoke to somebody this morning who had that as what's called a primary influence, and the question was, why was it there? And it was, the reason it was there was to help this person with teaching and getting out into the world, being sort of, you know, pushed into, you know, front of a class or an audience.
Now, did this person have a fear of being in front of people?
I think it was just something that was a little not quite understood. I certainly do come across, I mean, the fear of being in front of people is an interesting one, because that actually came up today with somebody. It's, you know, if you've ever had, you know, shaky voice and shaky knees in front of an audience, it comes from a past life fear. It's a past life fear of judgment. And that's something I talk about in the book. I go into past life fears and phobias. And judgment is one of the most common ones, you know, that, you know, how many people have stage fright or anxiety with, you know, public speaking. And this all comes from an experience in a past life where being judged has led to death. So when you're facing a situation like that again, your soul is recalling what happened before and going, oh my gosh, you know, last time we faced this kind of judgment, we died. And this is why some people can't perform in tests, or
right,
why people will get stage fright.
Right.
And it's very common because so many people have been judged simply for being who they are, you know, where whole countries have been massacred, you know, cities been wiped out, you know, pogroms and that kind of thing.
Now, and you also go through sections of challenges. Now, what is the difference between a challenge and an investigation in your book?
Challenges are issues that stem from childhood generally. They're issues that will affect us in some way. The most common one is insecurity. I find that all the time.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, you know, I usually, if I see a challenge of insecurity in somebody, it's a dead giveaway that there's been, that somewhere in the past, usually in their childhood, that the emotional rug has been pulled out from underneath them.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, you know, when I ask people, it's usually, you know, divorced parents or something like that. And it creates a kind of insecurity, just a little lack of self-confidence. And sometimes it will be masked very, very well, you know, that, you know, this person may not be showing it to the world, but it will most certainly be there. Investigations are actually much bigger issues. They tend to be issues in your life that are maybe repetitive or form a theme. I come across addiction, for example, that will come up, where an investigation of addiction, it's kind of interesting because you don't have to have an addiction yourself to have that investigation. You may be investigating it through being around people, perhaps choosing to be raised in a family where addiction's a problem, alcoholic parents, that kind of thing, or maybe a string of partners with a problem like that, or you could be dealing with it yourself.
Right.
Abuse is another one. An investigation is where you're going to have negative experiences in your life. Your soul will say, okay, well, let's turn this into an investigation, because it's a way of saying, we're going to have to face this. Let's find a way to get over it. It's like, you know, pulling you out of the fire.
Right.
And then whatever happens in your life, your soul has no self-pity. So any issue that it faces, it simply wants you to get on top of it. It wants
right.
you to make the best of it.
And I think that's the part that I've been there, done that, did this one. And I like in the book how you talk about the advantages and the risk in each section.
Right.
And it really is, okay, here's the reward, and if you need a little more work, this is what you might fall into, is the risk of it.
Yes.
It fits really nicely with them.
It was funny when I was writing the book and, you know, working with my guides, actually before I wrote the book and working on the instruction, my guides came up with those terms, and I I hated them. I thought it sounded like something from a, I don't know, financial, you know, financial program or something like that. I was going, oh, risks and advantages. But what they were getting at was they loved the term and insisted on using it, and so that's what I went with. And it's, yeah, the risk is really what you fall into if you're not really following your soul's guidance. And the advantage is what you can achieve, what you're really meant to achieve through really following your soul's direction.
Right. And it really points out that you know exactly when you're off.
Absolutely. If you find yourself in the risk, that's a way of saying, okay, you know, I've fallen in, kind of into the illusion is the way my guides would express it. I talk about the illusion in the book. The illusion is essentially the belief that, in a lot of cases, or this barrier, the belief that the physical plane is all that there is, or the barrier between the spiritual plane and the physical. And so people who are, when they talk about people being caught up in the illusion, it means that they can't kind of make their way through that barrier, or they can't see the right way to go.
And many people are waking up to realize that it is an illusion and they can't get through it. And that's one reason why you're here, to help them get through it.
Yeah.
And I'm very happy that you're here, and I thank you for taking up your calling.
Well, thank you.
As somebody who also does psychic readings, you get the judgments and you just stand up to who and what you are, and eventually they get a clue that it's okay. And
yeah.
It's definitely not the easiest path to take, but it's really a pleasure and an honor to do this path.
I agree. I think it's I feel so privileged to be doing what I do. You know, it's fascinating, and it's, you know, it appeals to the adventurer in me. You know, that I like to explore new things. I have what my guides would term a mission of exploration. So I'm learning about new things all the time doing this work, and that's it. You know, the worst thing for me is boredom. So I kind of, you know, every session I do is different, and I just learn so much through, you know, I always feel like I'm on this continual 45-degree trajectory as far as my learning goes.
Now, in the book you have exploration, but you also have examination. What's the big difference between those?
The difference between a mission of examination and a mission of exploration is that exploration is very much hands-on. It's about really going out and experiencing the world for yourself. And examination is much more about learning about the world, but learning about it in a more maybe through books or, you know, other ways, observation, yeah, absolutely. But it's also chosen for different reasons. Somebody with a mission of examination like myself, mission of exploration like myself, I've traveled a lot, I've lived in a lot of different places, I've ended up thousands of miles from where I was born.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've lived, I think I counted it the other day, I forget exactly the number, I think it's about 25 different homes. You know, I've been on the go and having a lot of experiences on the way. Mission of examination is different. You're learning about the world, but there's nothing pushing you quite the same way so outwardly. In fact, what it's often chosen for is to help you focus on detail, to focus on minutiae. For that reason, I see it a lot in lawyers or scientists, people who are, you know, as I put it, peering down microscopes all the time, or dealing with papers, contracts, those things where you need attention to detail. That's where a mission of examination comes in very, very useful.
Now, you don't mention it in this book, but I'm just going to ask, did you ever match up any of the missions, per se, with, like, astrology?
No, I actually don't, because I don't know anything about astrology. I just, that's a whole area I've never really explored. So I can't really comment.
I was just curious because what you're explaining right now, it sounds very much like an earth sign, or most definitely like a Virgo who's very detail oriented. And we do have another caller. Hello, caller.
Hi, Jennifer. It's Chris.
Hey, Chris, how are you?
Very good. I was taking notes and typing away because everything was so cool. I was actually very interested in investigation and challenges. And, of course, I have challenges of being out in public places and going bye-bye, and that stems from childhood insecurities.
So what's the problem then?
Panic attacks.
Panic attacks.
Panic attacks. Yeah. Panic attacks are a huge issue. A lot of that reaction is coming from your soul's fear of death. It's without doing a session with you, I couldn't go specifically to this, but a fear of open spaces. It's related to the fear that your soul will get almost at the moment of death, when it realizes the enormity of the universe and the expanse. That's one of the most common ways that this fear will be caused. What then happens? I mean, other things will trigger phobias and fears in this life.
Right, and then you spoke about the emotional rug being pulled out from underneath the child.
Yeah.
And I had that happen at the age of 18 months, and then I had something very traumatic at the age of 12 or 13, which put me in a spiral.
Yeah.
And that
can be very tough. You know, that one of the things is that when you're 18 months old, for example, you know, you may not appear to be, you know, conscious of what's going on around, but your soul is. And these hurts, these things that go very, very deep.
So the soul is mature, but the physical is not.
Right.
And that's why you can meet a child that's an indigo, and they've brought that maturity with them.
Right. So you have... you know, your soul is not at the same level as the physical body. So, but it's also, you know, we don't remember much about what happened before we were, you know, two or three. But those things that happen at that age, because they're affecting your soul so deeply, will be with you into adulthood.
Hmm. Well, I am working on the process of letting that fear and challenge go.
Absolutely.
And I've been doing pretty good.
You know, the best thing is to... The reason I talk about these in the book is to show how important it is to move past these things.
Yes.
To be able to transcend them so that you can then go on and really live the life your soul intended.
Mm-hmm. I know. I don't have any memory of any past lives. And last Sunday I was told by a medium that I trust that my life is blended.
That your life is what?
Blended. That I have a blended soul.
Okay, that's a term I'm not familiar with.
Well, what she was sharing with me is she saw this wheel of life, and then she saw this wagon wheel, and this person was laying in the back of the wagon with abdomen pain, and then she was feeling the pain, and apparently that was my soul in a past life.
Well, I have to say that You certainly had many, many past lives, you know, almost all of us do. I mean, they certainly influence us, you know, very deeply, because it's part of your soul's experience. Just because I don't know a term, it doesn't mean there's not some equivalent, or, you know, we all have different ways of expressing these. There's many, many different systems for expressing what happens on that level. But that's an interesting one.
Uh-huh. Well, I love your website, and
do you
offer a newsletter? Do you offer teleconference calls?
Do I offer conference calls?
Yeah.
No, I just do one-on-one.
Do one-on-one? Okay.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm going to have to read your book.
All right. Well, I hope you enjoy it.
All right. Thank you. And I don't know how to say your name.
It's Ainsley. Ainsley.
Ainsley.
McLeod. Yeah.
Okay. It's
right.
Very nice to meet you, Ainsley.
Chris, thank you for calling.
All right. God bless.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
Now, in there's a wide variety of phobias, and you say for the most part that's fear of death.
Yes. In fact, when my when I'm doing a session with somebody and my guides want to tell me that this person has a phobia, they will first tell me that there's a death issue there. And then we'll go and look at, look specifically at what the problem is. The thing about phobias is that they're fears that get triggered in some way in this life, but they're part of your soul's past, where something, where your soul feels that some event is going to lead to death. Your soul is conscious throughout all its lives, you know, from life one to life whatever. Your soul doesn't die. The human body dies, you know, between lives. And so it's easy for us to think of, you know, lives as different numbers, you know, or this is a past life. But it's not so easy for your soul to see a previous life as a past experience. It's kind of like if you had an experience when you're 3 years old, say you got bitten by a dog, and you have a fear of dogs now. I could say to you logically, there's no reason to be afraid of dogs because, you know, that was then and this is now. But it's still going to affect you because it's part of your experience. And so it's the same thing with the soul, that it can't clearly distinguish between one lifetime and the other. So when when it's faced with a lot of issues, it will have that, oh my gosh, here we go again kind of fear, rather than saying, oh, this is just stemming from another life, and, you know, that was then.
Well, I mean, and you say it in the book, and you're kind of restating that it's not really that important to know all your past lives, just the issues that came from that past life. Correct? Am I reading that? Am I saying that correctly?
I think that's I think that's essentially it. I mean, it would get a bit complicated if you were to be conscious of all your past lives. It's one of the reasons for the sort of amnesia that we have about past lives, because if you were continually facing all these fears and grief and complexities, it would be, you know, it's as I say in the book, it is hard enough just dealing with the grief and pain and hurt from this life. But if you were continually dealing with all the stuff from, you know, 50 or 100 past lives, it would be immobilizing.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is this kind of amnesia, but you can certainly through regression and other methods you can get in touch with past lives. In fact, the way you do this is to actually have the past lives channeled to you. They're actually kind of given to you, which is why if you do a regression or you go back to explore a past life, you're going to explore something that's of use to you. It's going to be
right. Something
that directly affects an issue that you're facing now, you know, that, you know, say like you go back to find out that you were tried in front of a court and burned at the stake, and you do have fear of judgment, phobia of judgment in this life. So these are actually being given to you. It's like your spirit guides are actually showing you this stuff, giving you these experiences that you've had to help you understand. So they're actually helping you to go to the specific source.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if it was random, we'd just be going into past lives and, you know, experience working in a field for an hour.
Yes.
Not really learning very much.
No. So what is the most important message you hope the readers get from this book? Even with a session with you?
Well, I think the certainly one of the most important things is to realize that we're not in this alone, you know, that we have spirit guides that we can work with. You know, we talked a lot about spirit guides tonight, and, you know, I think they're so key to all this, you know, to helping you to find the path that you're on. You can work with your spirit guides to help find a relationship, help to find the kind of work you should be doing. There's just no end to the number of things that you can do when you connect that way. So that's certainly a very important message, very important part of what I do.
And I want to say, I want to thank you. Our time is up, believe it or not. So I want to thank Ansley McLeod for joining me on AR today, and remind the listeners to check out his website at www.soul-world.com for more information about him and his wonderful book. If you want a discussion with him, please email him through that website. It will be well worth your time, I am sure. I also want to thank the listeners for tuning in tonight. Until next time, we hope with each breath of air, you gain new insights and inspirations. Many blessings to you, and good night.